I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome into a Thursday edition of Gwen and Chris, Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, and Adam Klug in today for Mr. Scraby. And Padres roll into St. Louis, losing 2 of 3 in Miami. They'll have a 4-game set here in what feels like the sun. As hot as it is,
I was going to say
it should be very, very interesting series. Padres certainly looking to finish strong before heading home for the series at home against the Mets and gosh, who else is
they Cardinals? I think next
Cardinals,
week.
Yeah. Flip it around.
Got them coming back. Yeah. Before we go too much further, Tony, I wanted to ask Adam Klug, who is sitting across from us in for Scraby today, and. How are you feeling in the nice, cool air conditioning of the Odyssey Palace, Adam? Okay, everything good for you?
It feels great in here. I can tell you, I just went and visited my parents in Tampa during the All-Star break.
Uh-huh.
It was hot and humid. You open the door and it's like punches you in the face.
I can imagine there's very few places on earth I'd rather not be than, than St. Louis, Missouri.
Yeah, little 95 feels like 103.
Yeah,
right
95.
Now,
so. I mean, the question when you're in the Midwest right now, Tony, is what's higher, the temperature or the humidity? They're battling it out. I had a very good friend of mine who was a big Cubs fan, lives on the West Coast, but was traveling and wanted to take his wife to Wrigley Field. They'd never been before, and they went yesterday afternoon. And texted him see how he was enjoying his day at Wrigley Field. He said, "I don't know. We left in the sixth inning. It was too flipping hot and humid." Like, he didn't.
Yeah, man.
I mean, and this is a lifelong fan, right? You know, getting to go to one game and just saying, "Yeah, I can't stand it. I can't stand it." So I know that that's what the Padres will be facing. This weekend in St. Louis, it's going to be brutal.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And so today's pitching matchup, Yu Darvish going up against Sonny Gray. Yu has worked his way kind of back into the flow. This is his fourth start, I believe, since coming off the IL. And it's, I think the encouraging thing is he has made the start every fifth day. Now it's just about him kind of knocking the rust off completely and kind of getting a little bit deeper in the games. But this is an encouraging sign. He's continued to make the starts here.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. The results seem to matter in the immediate sense. You know, we got to win this game. We got to go out. He's got to give us six innings. How many pitches can he throw? But the bigger deal is that he's bouncing back and ready to pitch again. Because, look, the Padres are going to get where they want to go, and we all think they're eventually going to get there. Once that calendar flips to October, Yu Darvish goes from whatever it is that he is now and whatever he is in August and September, he immediately goes almost to being the guy you think about as an ace pitching in a playoff game. And so, you just want to make sure you're bringing him along. And, this is very encouraging. Obviously you want to win today. You got to win the series. You got to do this. You got to do that. But you got to also think of the big picture. And, Darvish, to me, Michael King returning, and he's been hinting about August. You know, we talked about it, Tony, a couple weeks ago. These are two of the biggest storylines of the second half. Two guys going to be healthy and able to contribute to the Padres trying to get to the postseason? So.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Obviously, we're exactly a week away from the trade deadline, and it seems like the Padres' name is being mentioned, or should say connected to multiple players. I mean, I've heard Stephen Kwan. I've heard Marcell Ozuna. I've heard, Garcia and for the Rangers. I mean, you heard Sandy Alcantara earlier today. I mean, there is a slew of people that seem to be connecting the Padres with other people, which I think tells us one thing is that the Padres have made calls on quite a few people. It's what my guess would be when they're connected to so many people talking about this right now.
Well, and look, A.J. Preller's, I'm sure, seeing the same thing we're seeing and has been seeing it for, you know, 3 months. This is a good team. I don't want to lose sight of the fact that they're having a good season. And I know people are like, well, they lost a series to the Marlins. They never beat bad teams. Actually, nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah.
That was only the second series all year that they've lost to a team that currently has a losing record. The other was Arizona, and Arizona's not exactly a bad ball club. So they've been beating the bad teams all year long. They didn't in this last series, but it's still a good season. But we know that it's an imperfect team, right? There are definite holes on this club that A.J. Preller has got to try to address. And how he goes about addressing it, I think, is going to be one of the most interesting weeks, potentially, in Padre, you know, history is a long time. But it's going to be very interesting. You know, I mean, some people and a lot of people even think, Tony, that the Padres are going to be sellers and buyers at the same time. Dylan Cease's name can't stop coming up right now. Jake Cronenworth has been reported by Dennis Lynn of The Athletic, who's a very reliable source, that, you know, maybe they are thinking of, you know, trying to move Jake in the contract. So they could be, you know, Suarez, you and I have talked about, seems like a nice luxury to have. I don't know that they would be willing to part with that luxury, but I think he could bring something. So the Padres could be doing both at the same time, and I don't know how A.J. Preller does that. I mean, is he on the phone with one team, and they say, well, we really want Dylan Cease, and he says, well, hang on here, I'm on the other line trying to acquire somebody to replace Dylan. You know, I mean, it's going to be very interesting how this all plays out over the next 7 days. So I'm kind of excited about it. And, you know, we'll just see where what the roster looks like next Friday, next weekend. But I think it'll be better than it is now.
I agree. I think if you're a Padre fan, and of course this is subject to change, but history would tell you that you should be excited for this time of year because something usually happens that makes your team better. There's what, the 1 year it was on the margins and it didn't really quite work out with, man, who was it? They made the trade for Pittsburgh, second base.
Oh, yeah. Adam Frazier. Yeah.
Frazier.
That one didn't work.
That's probably the one time it didn't, like, turn fruitful.
It didn't work, but you know what? When we got Adam Frazier, who's leading the league in hitting, and everybody said, what a steal. It's revisionist history to say that you didn't like that trade out there, because everybody liked it.
Didn't like for sure in terms of people going back and forth, but certainly you could all agree that it didn't turn out the way that we expected it to, but everything else has. So I think if you're a Padres fan, you should be excited. What that looks like, I don't know. There are a lot of different factors in this. I mean, you know, on the outside looking in, we don't know what the Padres feel about the apron and going, you know, to another level in terms of how much money you have on your roster in terms of salary. We don't know how they want to play that, which could be why there's conversation of Dylan Cease going out, who's making like 13.5, I believe it is, and bringing something back in, probably multiple pieces if you're moving a piece like that. And so, I don't know. This is I don't know where it goes, but I am excited as you are to see where it goes.
And as excited as you and I are, you climbed on an airplane yesterday with 25 to 27, eight guys. You know, several of whom are, I don't want to say they're looking over their shoulder, but this is a very uneasy time of year. Take us through that.
Sure.
You've been with teams, they make trades, you know, guys are, I mean, you know, these guys got to go out and perform and win games here the next week, but they're looking at the Twitter feed, they're looking at everything and hearing everything, so it's really a hard time for all concerned.
I as excited as I am for, I hate it for the guys who are being mentioned, right? I hate it for Jake. I hate it for possibly Suarez or whoever it may be that it has their name mentioned in it, because ultimately that leaves you in kind of an uncertain feel, and that's no way to go out and play. And, you know, you try to do your best to separate the two once the game starts. You try not to think about it. But inevitably, you know, something could happen during the game or whatever that kind of puts your mind on it. And it's just a rough place to be. I could just tell you the experience of being around the team over the last three or four, for sure.
Yeah.
There is the 1 year that I think the Frazier deal went down. That one was it was dicey, man. And the year that they traded Hosmer, that one was also kind of like you could cut the tension with a knife around the stadium. So I think it's different every year. And you know, I think the more you go through it, the more you're able to kind of handle it in the best way or shape or form. But I said this to Jesse the other day. I'm kind of happy that Thursday on the deadline is an off day and we won't have to necessarily be around,
yeah,
you know, to kind of have to deal with that tension that's kind of floating around there.
Have you ever in your experience as a general manager ever gone around to a player or maybe called them privately and said, you know, you might hear your name, but I'm telling you, you're not in this. Don't worry about it. Focus on your job. Or do general managers ever go that route?
There have definitely been times where a general manager has had felt the need to call someone up to the office or come down and talk to a guy that, you know, whether it was the rumors weren't true or the rumor was true.
Yeah.
And to kind of give them some kind of word whether it was, you know, which way it was going or not. I think there are some GMs that have kept guys informed, but I know sometimes GMs don't have time. Like, it's the deal happens and then boom.
Yeah,
you just
right.
It's done and then you got to make that phone call.
Well, hey, look, Tony, I'm going to give you one stat before you get ready to, you know, prepare for the broadcast tonight. You know, 3-1 run games against the Marlins. They won one, they lost the last two. The Padres have now played, and this is absolutely astonishing to me, 57 games this year decided by one or two runs. That's crazy. 56% of their games. And it really, if you go back to the game yesterday, you go to any game in that series, the players, are pretty aware that these are the kind of games they're going to be playing. And it now starts to make every play, every double play that's not turned, every at-bat with runners and scoring, it seems to make everything more important because you know that the game is going to be decided on the margins like that. You know, do you get that sense now as we move into the last couple of months of the season that that's just something we all recognize?
I think so at this point. I mean, they played over half their games, and they've been that way. So
yeah. You
just hope that they aren't thinking about making mistakes, though, because that's obviously when you're playing tight games, yes, mistakes are going to be magnified, but you can't think about it. You just got to go out and keep playing. I think these guys know that. I think they recognize that they got to make the plays out there because they're not scoring at the rate that they need to in order to have some room for error. And so you like that they've grown up. You like that they've been able to win a lot of those games. But,
yeah,
you know, it does tax your team down, especially the bullpen. So
yeah,
we'll see how that goes. All right, I have to hop off here. You're going to continue on as we get to the pregame show. Padres, Cardinals today, 6:40, I believe, is first pitch.
For you, yes.
And, for us. 3:40 for them, for you guys down there, right?
And 4:40 here, and Tony will spend the next 2 hours packing his body in ice, getting ready for the broadcast. My goodness.
I'm on the sun, ladies and gentlemen.
We feel for you, man.
Thank you. More Gwen and Chris on the other side.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
Tony is off. And getting himself ready now for the broadcast. Chris Hello and Adam Klug alongside here as we return to the air-conditioned confines of the Odyssey Palace Studios. We'll be here for about an hour and a half, and then Sam Levitt will take over and get you ready for the Padres. pregame show tonight. Padres, as mentioned already, taking on the St. Louis Cardinals. Before we get to all of this stuff, I want to remind you out there, Padres are returning home on Monday to take on the New York Mets. On Tuesday, they got the sandless beach towel giveaway. And that was running around the studio here somewhere yesterday. I don't see it today. And you know what? I know Scraby didn't steal it because he's not working today. He normally walks off with all of our stuff.
I got another one on my desk. Should I run and grab it?
No. It's a beach towel, and it doesn't retain sand. I think that's all you need to know. It's presented by Southwest Airlines, and the first 40,000 fans in attendance will receive one on Tuesday when the Padres host the Mets. Sandless Beach Towel Night presented by Southwest Airlines. You can use it as a blanket as well, towel or both. First pitch, 6:40. Remember, the gates open 90 minutes prior to the game start. So arrive early. You want to make sure you get the giveaway item next Tuesday night. For more information, please visit Padres.com/giveaways. One other thing. If you can't wait for the Padres to return home, you can head down to Petco Park right now and check out the all-new Labubu pop-up shop. And Adam Klug or somebody watching on the chat is going to have to clue me in as to what that is. But I imagine I'm hearing that these are like the thing now.
I just like hearing you say Labubu.
Me too. I like kind of saying it. Labubu, Labubu, Labubu. You can find an amazing assortment of these extremely popular collectibles, plus outfits and accessories through Sunday. Petco Park. Who knew? Your go-to for Labubu pop-up stuff. All right, Padres, Cardinals, and I mentioned just as we got done talking with Tony there in the open, and about the Padres numbers and how many close games they've played this year. And I've had a little time to go through a lot of these numbers, and I think numbers can be, you can get bogged down by numbers, right? You still got to go out, you still got to play the game. And then on the other side, you know, you can go analytics and you can get really creative, and I think you can overdo it that way as well. But I also think there's a lot of numbers that do tell a story, and here are some of them for the Padres. Now, one of them I mentioned to Tony already. The Padres have now played 57 games that have been decided by either one or two runs. The good news is they're very good in these games. They're 22-16 in one-run games, despite losing the last two in Miami. And they're 13-6 in games decided by two runs. So overall, plus 13. They've won 35. They've lost 22. Padres have had a way of winning close games. Why? They have a great bullpen, and their bullpen normally beats the other team's bullpen in a close game. As a matter of fact, the Padres' bullpen has 30 wins this year. The Padres' starters have only 25. So that has been the secret to the Padres' success. Keep it close. Get it to the bullpens. Try to win the battle of the bullpens. It's happened more times than not. Question? Concern? Yeah. 57 times already, one or two run games. That means one bounce of the baseball goes the other way. One umpire call goes against you and you can't challenge it, and you can lose these games. And that's what you concern yourself with a little bit moving forward. You'd like to have a little room to breathe. And most nights, it seems like the Padres don't. So that's something I think to keep an eye on going forward as they try to negotiate this trade deadline. Can they get themselves an offense that can put away a few of these games and not make us all sweat so much? Secondly, speaking of sweating, Padres are going to be doing a lot of it this weekend in St. Louis. And playing the Cardinals on the road, a four-game series, brings this stat to mind. The Padres are not having a good season at all against winning teams. And the Cardinals, despite some recent struggles, got shut out yesterday in Colorado, of all things. But the Cardinals are a winning team. They have a winning record. They're one game over 500. So they qualify as a winning team right now. Well, the Padres' record against those teams this year, winning teams, is 20-32. That's not very good. I mean, honestly, it's quite poor. The only thing, again, that's saving the Padres is that when they don't play a winning team, they're 35-15. So they have crushed the teams they're supposed to. But can they beat the better teams? Well, we're going to find out now, because 29 of the next 32 games for the Padres are against teams that currently have a winning record. The only team they play in the next month that doesn't currently have a winning record is Arizona. And the Diamondbacks were just at 500 a couple of days ago. So this schedule, from now until the third or fourth week of August, it's gonna tell the tale. It's going to tell us, is this Padre team legit? Can they really make it and make a run to the postseason? So far, they have not proven they can do it. They frankly haven't. They're 20-32 against winning teams. Furthermore, tonight begins the Padres' 13th series on the road against a winning team. 13th. How many have they won so far? One. The only team with a winning record that the Padres have won a series from on the road this year, strangely, is the team with the best record in baseball right now, the Brewers. That's it. Padres have not won another series against a team with a winning record. They lost series to the Cubs, the Reds, the Phillies, the Dodgers, the Tigers, the Astros, the Yankees. You get the idea. They have not been able to beat good teams on the road all year long. Can they do it? We'll find out this weekend. They got four games in St. Louis. One other thing that really stands out to me, and we talked about this yesterday. With the trade deadline coming up, we're going to hear about all the big names. We're going to hear about the frontline players. Who's going to move? Who's going to really make an impact? I will be honest with you. I think the Padres, sure, be great to make a big splash. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. And we'll discuss this further in the next segment. But what they really need is some players around the edges. The Padres bench, I knew it was bad until I looked it up last night. And then I realized just how bad it is. Padres pinch hitters this year are currently batting 162. They currently have an OPS of 469. I don't even know how it's possible to have an OPS less than 500, but they do. And all season, and here we are 102 games in, all season, the Padres pinch hitters have a total of, count them, 2 extra base hits. No doubles, no triples. Trenton Brooks hit a pinch hit home run earlier in the season. When he was coming off the bench, Gavin Sheets hit a pinch hit home run. That is all the Padres have gotten off their bench. It is next to nothing. And I think that's something that's got to be addressed as well as we get into the trade deadline week. We'll talk more about that when we return. Also, when we come back, the passing of a legend today. Yeah, in the sports world. We'll talk about what that means and what his legacy should mean. And we'll tie it into a little bit about what the Padres might be thinking moving forward. You'll see what I mean when Gwen and Chris continues.
The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Quick reminder here before we get back to it, Crisello. Tony Gwynn Jr. is in St. Louis, sweltering in the heat. And he and Jesse Agler getting ready for the call. Game one of the four-game series. About an hour from right now, we'll send it over to Sam Levitt for the pregame show. But tomorrow morning, you can get up close and personal with the Padres and manager Mike Schilt. He joins Ben and Woods. That's tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. It's the manager's report. It's refreshed by EcoWater SoCal. Try alkaline water for just $9.95 a month. EcoWater SoCal, keeping it soft since 1925. You know, every time Schilt goes back to St. Louis, you know, it's a big thing for him. It's where he kind of cut his teeth in baseball. And I have some family living in St. Louis, and I don't know that they represent everyone there. They absolutely loved Mike Schilt there. And they didn't like at all the fact that he was let go. I don't know. I'm sure there must have been somebody, right, in St. Louis. Ah, Schilt's terrible. But, hey, they really did not want to see him go. And I think people there still miss Mike Schilt. You know,
it feels like one of sports' great unsolved mysteries. We still
as to
don't,
why
we still don't know why they got
the,
rid of him.
The only excuse that I ever heard given by the Cardinals was that he just was too intense, and he just kind of wore on the organization with his constant intensity. I don't find that. That's like saying, you know, model and she's too good looking. We can't have her run the runway.
Oh,
you know,
it's just too difficult to deal with all those wins, all those playoff appearances.
I mean, you know, we can't have her walking down the Victoria's Secret's path. She's diverting attention from everybody else. I mean, I don't get it. Mike Schilt was a really successful manager with the Cardinals, as we know. They, you know, couldn't see eye to eye, whatever it was. Padres brought him in, and it really worked out well. I do not think... I mean, I wasn't there. I don't think the Padres brought Mike Schilt here to be the replacement for Bob Melvin. I think they brought him here because he was just a really good baseball guy, and you want good baseball guys in your organization. And he was out of work at the time. Of course, Bob Melvin didn't work out. Man, this worked out perfectly, I think, for the Padres.
I'm having trouble with the timeline top of my head. Was Mike Schilt brought in the exact same year as Bob Melvin, or had Bob Melvin already been here for a year and then Schilt arrived?
Yeah, I don't know. I have to look that up to be 100% sure.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah, look it up. It was close. But, you know, look, Mike Schilt, I don't know that we appreciate him 100% here because we tend to be critical of our own manager. But I can tell you that in St. Louis, they miss this guy, and he'll probably get a pretty good ovation tonight and throughout the weekend.
They both arrived in 2022.
Okay. But yeah, like I said,
which lends to the point, it's not like they had a year of Bob Melvin and thought it was going south, even if he ended up staying for
that's what I think.
That's what I was leading
right,
towards.
Right, thanks. Yeah, I think Bob Melvin was here as the manager. Mike Schilt was here because he's a great baseball guy and you want him in the organization. All right, we're going to get back to a bunch of baseball, and I want to tie this into baseball a little bit as best I can. But sad news for anybody in sports world / entertainment world, probably more entertainment than sports. But, man, Hulk Hogan, you talk about somebody that seemed indestructible. And he passed away today. I'm sure you've probably heard, at the age of 71, Clearwater, Florida. Call came in this morning, cardiac arrest. And Hogan was pronounced dead at the hospital. No signs of foul play, etc. Look, Hulk Hogan was bigger than wrestling, certainly. And he was probably bigger than life. I mean, Hulk Hogan. The name, you almost didn't need the Hogan to say Hulk. You knew who everybody was talking. He said Hulkster. That was a given. There's not many guys that, extend that kind of credibility and immediate attention. And, you know, so it's a sad day. There's no question about this. And I do want to bring up, by the time WrestleMania actually came around, I was actually getting a little older than I think the target wrestling age. But I loved wrestling growing up, just like all of you did. But I didn't watch WrestleMania as closely as the rest of you. But I'll tell you one thing I saw, and I watched it again today just to be sure. And I don't care if you want to use fake, you want to use choreographed, you want to use athletic, you want to use entertainment, you want to divide it up any way you want to. But there was nothing fake about Hulk Hogan picking up Andre the Giant and slamming him to the ring cart to the floor. Can't fake that. He picked up Andre the Giant, put him over his head, and slammed him to the floor. That's what I always remember about Hulk Hogan and a whole bunch of the rest of it. So sad day indeed, 71 years old, and it comes at the tail end of a week where we lost Ozzy Osbourne, another legend who, you know, I think Ozzy transformed or transcended music, you know, metal, whatever you want to say. Malcolm Jamal Warner. It's been a difficult week for a lot of, you know, big time and loved celebrities. But here was Adam Klug brought this question up to me. And I think it's a bit of a stretch, but we're going to make the stretch anyway, Adam. How should Hulk Hogan be remembered? Should he just be heroic in every way? Because later in his life, there were a lot of controversies surrounding Hulk Hogan, the person. His real name, by the way, was not Hulk Hogan. You probably have guessed that. His real name was Terry Bollea. But the Hulkster was embroiled in a lot of controversy. Video recordings of him using the N-word. Those things are not easy to overcome. He was actually terminated by WWE when that happened. He was brought back as an ambassador a few years later. He had a sex tape released apparently without his knowledge. He wasn't too pleased. He sued. I don't know if you remember this, Adam. He won the case and got $115 million, as if Hulk Hogan needed that. But that's what you get for releasing. Anyway, there were some controversies around him. So do we just forget it all and say, you know what, Hulk Hogan is just a legend and he was great and he's to be celebrated forever? And I think everybody has their own, you know, way they're going to do that. I would imagine there's a lot of people that say no. I mean, I saw a video recording of him using the N-word. That is not something I'm willing to let pass. And I back up the people who feel that way. Here's the connection. One of the players that the Padres have been rumored to be getting at the trade deadline is Marcell Ozuna. And it's a loose connection, but I think you can see where we're going here. Marcell Ozuna, star slugger for the Atlanta Braves the last couple of years. Finished in the top, four or five of the MVP voting recently. Not having a great year this year, but still a threat. A power threat. But Marcell Ozuna was almost taken right out of baseball forever because of what? Abusive behavior?
Domestic violence.
Domestic violence.
Yes.
Right.
And also had a DUI that complicated things.
It complicated things. And I think it's fair to say, as a Padre fan, if we were to trade for Marcell Ozuna, would we all just celebrate Marcell Ozuna? Would we be willing to make bygones be bygones, say he served his penance? He, you know, hopefully has sorted things out in his life and got some help and deserves a second chance, as all of us do. Or is that something we hang on to and it becomes difficult for us to root necessarily for Marcell Ozuna? And I think it's a fair question. By the way, we should say, before we go too far into it, Ben and Woods had a baseball reporter on today who basically said Marcell Ozuna is not coming to the Padres, that's not been actually talked about.
Well, Robert Murray, who's the MLB reporter, he said on his podcast that he can't confirm any of the reports by Hector Gomez, and they've not spoken.
There you go.
And then Braves beat writer Mark Bowman for MLB.com also tweeted, according to his sources, the Braves and Padres have not had discussions about Marcell Ozuna.
All right. Thank you, Adam, for
You're welcome.
Clearing that up. But yeah, so maybe Ozuna's not headed here at all. But it brings, you know, and if you're going to say, well, you know, okay, what's the big deal about a Marcell Ozuna? Well, okay, then let's take it up a notch. How about Trevor Bauer? Would you be willing to accept him as a Padre? How about Julio Urias, pitcher? You know, domestic violence, twice kicked out of baseball? But his suspension, by the way, is over. So where do you draw the line? I guess we all draw the line in a different place is probably the best answer to that. But we talked about it on the roundtable today some. And I think it's worth kind of thinking about. Braden asked me straight up, because, you know, you're the biggest Dolphins fan. How do you couch rooting for Tyreek Hill every Sunday? It's a fair question. And it's a hypocritical response. There's no other way around it. I, of course, root for Tyreek Hill to do well in the game because I want my team to win the game. He happens to be on the team. Beyond that, I don't root for Tyreek Hill in any sense, and I'm not a fan, and I'm not really thrilled that he's even a part of the team I like. I don't know if that's the right way to go about it, but that's how I get through the Sunday afternoon. We all kind of face this a little bit if we're diehards to our team, because there's a lot of imperfect athletes out there.
As you know, I'm born and raised in Atlanta.
Yeah, right.
I'm a Braves fan.
You were with the Marcell Ozuna thing was right in front of you.
I do not root for Marcell Ozuna. Haven't since the incidents. I don't condone violence towards women.
I don't think anybody does.
I don't condone the DUI, which puts other people's lives at risk and is a really dumb decision. And ever since those things happened, I wanted the team that I root for to cut ties with them. I don't want to root for them, and I didn't necessarily appreciate being put in the position as a fan to root for that should he come up in a situation where...
to win or lose a game, yeah. Well, I think you hit it, and Paul Reindel was the one I thought had hit it this morning in the roundtable, and I think you're right also. If the Padres traded for Marcell Ozuna, if that's the move they made here in the next week... I'm not going to go, I would certainly never be furious. I think that would be an overreaction. But I would be troubled that the Padres put me as a fan in the position of having to decide whether or not I should root for him. That is kind of where I think this comes down. I'm not going to turn in my season tickets. I'm not going to, you know, never watch another game. But I think that, and I hope, and I think the Padres understand that to a certain extent. They have been very good about steering clear of, quote, troubled athletes. Now, somebody's going to say, well, they got Fernando Tatis Jr. I think that's different. Fernando's PED suspension, I think that is different from a character issue or something to the effect of abusive behavior towards women, things of that nature, whatever you want to. Whatever, you know, transgression bothers you out there the most.
I will give an example, though, Chris, where I was very close to giving up my fandom.
Okay.
A couple years ago, the Falcons were heavily in pursuit of Deshaun Watson. And that was well after all of he was suspended, all those things. And I said, I was troubled enough that they even pursued him. That bothered me.
Right.
But I said, if they actually made the trade and got Deshaun Watson, I would stop being a Falcons fan. Like, do you think you
could have done it?
Yeah.
You said it, but could you have actually on Sunday found yourself rooting against the team with the red helmet and the bird on the side?
That guy with that many allegations against women and her, like, how do I have a wife, respect my wife and my daughter,
say,
let's all root for Deshaun Watson?
It's all fair.
Can't do it.
Well, I mean, I know many Cleveland Browns fans said they could no longer root for the Browns, but I will tell you this. While Deshaun Watson was in Cleveland, it was a couple of years, right? Was the stadium
still on the roster?
Yeah, okay, right. He's still on the roster, technically, yeah. But when my point is, while he's been there, I wouldn't say the stadium there in Cleveland has been empty. Would you?
No.
People still come out and support and root for the Browns.
And that's what the team is banking on.
Of course, and they're going to be right in the end. People need something to do and a team to root for. And although there was many detractors in Cleveland and people who were protesting inside, outside the stadium, you know, the Browns went on with it. I think it was an absolutely horrible decision for the Browns. And I think it set their franchise back, frankly.
But the Browns are a terrible organization. Their second-round pick last year was arrested for domestic violence, a cornerback. He's still on the team. And now they're dealing with it again this year with their second-round pick, Quinshon Judkins, who just got arrested for domestic
Are the Chiefs any better? I mean, the Chiefs are the ones that brought in Kareem Hunt the Browns even got rid of him.
They at least got rid of Kareem Hunt when it initially happened. And now they're choosing to believe in second chances of redemption. But at the time, Kareem Hunt was a star running back, and they said adios.
Chiefs,
and then the Browns signed
Chiefs
him right
have won
away.
All their Super Bowls.
Because they're the Browns.
Yeah. Chiefs have won all these Super Bowls with some guys that
By the way,
are less than stellar character.
Browns immediately signed Kareem Hunt. Browns traded for Deshaun Watson. And then these last two second-round picks. The Browns just don't care.
You think the Browns trump everybody in that
they
department?
They don't care.
Bottom line, though, I think the Padres, I don't think we'll get Marcell Ozuna, and I think one of the main reasons why is because I don't think the Padres would want to put their fans in that situation of having to decide, should I root for him or should I root against him? And I think, you know, I think it's an interesting dynamic because I don't know any of us who are 100% can look in the mirror and say, we're taking a hard line stand. We might say it, but I'll at least admit when Tyreek Hill gets free and into the end zone for a big touchdown, I'm pretty pleased for the moment. I just am. I wouldn't want to invite him to dinner. Anyway, we'll see where it goes. Rest in peace, though, to Hulk Hogan.
See, that wasn't a stretch linking the two. Again, it's separating the art from the artist.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't a stretch.
I mean, look, Kevin Spacey's obviously been in the news for a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, honestly, House of Cards is one of my favorite shows ever.
Good show.
I don't think I'd want to go back and watch that again.
No. How many music artists have been in some sort of peril?
I mean, look.
And are we never going to put their music on again?
Michael Jackson has still played all over the place.
Michael Jackson has played all over the place.
He really is. Whether
you believe P. Diddy's
call
innocent,
me a moralist. I don't listen to him. I can't listen to Michael Jackson. I don't want to watch Kevin Spacey, and I don't want to root for any of these athletes. Sorry.
If you have 20 P. Diddy songs on your phone, are you going to remove them?
There's another certain artist who has made a lot of anti-Semitic comments whose name I will not say.
There's another
and whose
guy.
Whose music has been removed from my phone.
It has been. It probably should be.
Absolutely. My life will go on without being able to listen to his music.
Yes, it will. And I've always said, in a perfect world, I'd like to believe that good things happen to good people. I'd also like to believe that when you're putting a team together, you can find another athlete who doesn't bring that baggage with them that can play the game well. And in most cases, that's true. 95% of the cases.
Marcell Ozuna isn't even good.
He's been terrible the last 2 months, so that might be the bottom line to a lot of people out there. All right, we'll see where it goes. Other names, of course, being linked to the Padres include Stephen Kwan and Charlie Morton. And both guys had really good days today in the Baltimore-Cleveland game. Charlie Morton pitched 6 2/3 innings, struck out 7, got the win. Stephen Kwan hit 2 home runs in the game off Charlie Morton, but Cleveland lost the game. Charlie Morton's an interesting name. We brought it up yesterday, and I immediately said no. But I haven't really been paying close attention. Charlie Morton started the season 0-7. He was terrible. His ERA was over 9. Since then, Charlie Morton, with his victory today, is 6-1 with an ERA of 3.5. Actually makes him one of the better pitchers in the league the last month and a half or two.
Baltimore's open for business, right?
They sure are. Charlie Morton's a great postseason pitcher as well, or has been in his career. All right, we'll talk more about that. More Gwen and Chris. We got another half an hour to go. Stick around. We head into what is the final hour or so, actually about 40 minutes of Gwen and Chris for this Thursday ahead of Padre baseball. Tonight, Padres, St. Louis Cardinals, right here on San Diego's number one sports talk station, 97.3 The Fan. Chris Ello here. Both my guys, Tony Gwynn Jr., he's actually was on earlier, but getting ready for the broadcast. Scraby with a rare couple of days off here. I believe he's gone to visit with his sister's new baby. So Uncle Scraby is be on display for a few days. Alert the media up in Northern California. Scraby is headed that way. This hour on 97.3 The Fan, brought to you by Staples. Calling all parents and teachers. At Staples, your back-to-school budget is officially saved by the button. The easy button, with supplies as low as 25 cents. Plus laptops up to 40% off and more deals on the top brands and trending styles. Find it all at Staples. That was easy. Lineups are out for the ball game tonight. Padres don't really have a whole lot of different ways they can go, but they do keep trying to mix it up to try to find the right combination. Fernando leads off again, Arraez behind him. Machado, Jackson Merrill, who's been batting sixth the last couple of games, moves up to fourth. Xander, then Gavin Sheets. Gavin, by the way, had a 2-for-20 swing through D.C. and Miami. So a little bit of a slump for Gavin. I hope it doesn't last too long because he's been one of the great surprises of this season. Jake Cronenworth will bat seventh. And then the black hole, that is the 8-9 spot for the Padres. And that's not an opinion. That's fact. Lowest OPS in all of baseball from the 8-9 spots in the order, Padres. They're the worst. Bryce Johnson will hit there tonight, followed by Martin Maldonado against Sonny Gray, who is last time out. I don't even want to say this because I feel like I'm going to jinx him into a good performance. His last time out, Sonny Gray gave up a career-high 9 runs. Last time out. See what happens tonight against Yu Darvish and the Padres. A couple of quick notes, and then we're going to get to the our final segment. We'll focus in on the very latest that we can give you anyway on trade rumors and trade innuendos. We do have 1 week to go before the actual trade deadline, so we'll give you the names that have been popping up the most and give you everybody's opinion out there. And we'll hear from John Morosi of MLB Network in the next segment. So stick around for that. We'll give you the latest on all the Padre trade scuttlebutt as it stands now. But, you know, Adam, the NFL preseason season is almost upon us. Are you aware that there's a game next Thursday?
The Hall of Fame game.
Yeah.
I'm a huge NFL fan. I'm very aware.
I don't know that we're going to be too into it next Thursday because it's also the same right as the trade deadline.
No, I don't think we'll be covering that. But I've been seeing a lot of training camp videos on Twitter.
You're not going to ask Tony and I during the show next Thursday at 5 o'clock to break away from Padre trade talk to
I shall not be.
Kick around the Charger Lion game next Thursday.
No.
Yeah, I know you won't. But there's a couple of NFL things that I wanted to touch on, and one of them has to do with a guy. Let's just put it this way, Adam. We should all be so lucky in our lives to be as flat out unsuccessful as this guy has been, like proven over and over and over again, and to continue getting new jobs. I want to tell you who he is yet, but this guy spent three seasons as an offensive coordinator, mediocre there. That earned him the backing of a very high-profile NFL quarterback who was able to talk a different NFL team into hiring this guy as their head coach. This guy ran that franchise into the ground in less than a year. I don't think he made it through the year. In fact, I'm sure he didn't.
Let me know when you're ready for me to reveal who you're talking about. I only need one guess.
Oh, you don't need to guess. I mean, everyone's going to already know, right? He was the head coach of a team. He ran them into the ground in less than a year. He was fired. But he was rewarded for that pathetic performance by being hired again as an offensive coordinator, working with that same high-profile quarterback who had given him a vote of confidence the first time.
Before you reveal, you mentioned had a high-profile quarterback talk an NFL team into hiring him as their head coach. It was with the allure of him coming to that team to play for said head
yes.
coach. Yes. And then the quarterback didn't go to that
team.
The
quarterback changed his mind, right.
So they hired the coach and didn't get the quarterback.
Right. Got the coach, ruined the franchise, got rid of the guy. Then he went and joined the quarterback, and the team went 7-10 without the quarterback, who was hurt. And then with the quarterback last year, 5-12. So that team moved on from this guy. Congratulations, Nathaniel Hackett. He has a job again. Like, why? How do you get this? There has to be, there just has to be somebody out there, an assistant at Louisiana Lafayette, who deserves an opportunity ahead of somebody that has just failed so badly. But Coach Matt LaFleur says he's bringing in Nathaniel Hackett not to work with his offense, get this, Adam, to work with the defense. Nathaniel Hackett was 3 years offensive coordinator in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers, went to Denver, became the head coach, was a disaster. Last 2 years, Jets, offensive coordinator, they've been awful. Gets another shot.
Maybe it's strategic. Maybe it's like George Costanza. They just bring in Nathaniel Hackett. He tells them everything he knows, and then they do the exact opposite of what
he says.
It's
a bizarro coach. Listen to what Nathaniel Hackett says and do the opposite. Coach Matt LaFleur today said that Nathaniel Hackett will work with his defense, but will bring an offensive perspective to the other side of the ball. I don't really understand what that even means, frankly. But good for you, Packers. Good luck on that. I don't get it. I just don't. As you know, here I forgot, even forgot this. He was offensive coordinator last year for the Jets. When Robert Saleh was fired, the new guy came in, interim coach Jeff Ulbrich. He demoted Hackett. He took him off offensive coordinator. That's how bad he was doing. I don't get it. But certain guys just do that, Adam. They slip through the cracks.
I mean, at first I thought you were talking about the current head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, Brian Schottenheimer.
Who is Has he been that unsuccessful
as an
assistant? I didn't know he'd been that unsuccessful. Well, he's getting his first shot as a head coach. Look, Jerry Jones has not exactly done anything right for the last, I believe it's now been 30 years. Cowboys won the Super Bowl in 92, 93, and 95. That's 30 years. Jerry has not made too many correct calls in that time. I also want to congratulate the Jets, Hackett's former team. They've lost their quarterback, Justin Fields. He suffered a dislocated toe at camp. Carted off the field this morning. Jets have said he avoided a serious injury. Fields is expected to be ready for week one. When the Jets face, of all teams, Aaron Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers, like the NFL did not know ahead of time that Rodgers was going to sign in Pittsburgh. That's just too big of a coincidence for me.
It's all scripted, right? Choreographed, like wrestling.
At least wrestling's up front with it. You know what I mean? They just say, hey, it's choreographed. One last thing on the NFL, because we were talking about Deshaun Watson and Cleveland. Their general manager today, Andrew Berry, said that there is a scenario where the team will keep four quarterbacks on the roster competing to be the starter, but he did not name Deshaun Watson as one of those four quarterbacks.
Did I mention that team is a dumpster fire?
Yes, you did. Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, and two rookies who were drafted, Dylan Gabriel, and you may have heard of this guy, Shedeur Sanders. Those are the four. Deshaun Watson is on the physically unable to perform list. So is he still getting paid some, like, a ton of that money? Man. Well, that's the penalty that the ownership of the Browns gets. By the way, the Dolphins turned their tight end position over to Darren Waller. Did you hear about that one? Brought him out of retirement. He's already on the physically unable to perform list, and he hasn't even suited up yet. Some teams just keep on keeping on. You can almost count on them to just be stupid. The gift that keeps on giving. Dumb NFL teams. All right, let's take a break. We'll check some traffic. And then when we come back, we'll give you all the latest scuttlebutt, as it were, on the Padres and where they sit with the trade deadline a week away. Who's being talked about the most? Who's the longest shot? And what the Padres may or may not do as we understand it now. That's when we come back on Gwen and Chris, San Diego's number one sports talk station, 97.3 The Fan. Adam Klug setting things up for us over there today, sitting in for Scraby. By the way, Adam Klug is my direct boss, so I don't know how many of you have to perform your job ever with your boss sitting no more than 3 or 4 feet away from you the whole day. Trying to do the best I can, Adam. Hope I'm living up to your expectations, sir. Tony Gwynn Jr., of course, was on earlier. He's getting ready for the broadcast in St. Louis. Padres and Cardinals, they're the only two National League teams, by the way, that play today. So no need to check too much on the scoreboard. See if the Padres can beat a team with a winning record. Not something they have done a very good job of this year. I said it earlier, they're 20-32 now against teams that currently have a winning record. If you love Mediterranean food, try Spiro's. Authentic Mediterranean cuisine. I love it. It's in Coronado. It's in La Jolla. Dining, takeout options, visit spirocuisine.com. All right, here's the trade deadline stuff. And I'll try to make it as simple as I can. There's an interesting story today, you can read it if you like. It's on ESPN.com. And it says, here are the top 10 biggest names on the market right now. And it predicts where all 10 will land. Now, I will give this story credit. It pokes fun at itself by pointing out that last year they wrote the exact same story and got only one of the 10 predictions correct. And what the story says is it's one-third prediction, one-third science, and one-third entertainment. I believe it's about eight-tenths prediction, one-tenth science, and one-tenth entertainment. I don't see how they really know. Because I don't even think the teams really know exactly how it's all going to shake out right now. But here are the names that are being mentioned most closely connected with the Padres. First are the three names that are mentioned as possibility of leaving the Padres. And the one you're hearing more and more and more is Dylan Cease. Dylan Cease. Everybody wants Dylan Cease. Not sure what they're looking at, but they see something in that 3-10 ERA nearly 5 record of Dylan Cease. Most likely what they see is all those strikeouts. And the stuff that just hasn't been translating to, you know, very successful pitching so far this season. Dylan Cease also free agent at the end of the season. Padres would have to pay pretty handsomely, most likely, to keep him. So Dylan Cease is a name you hear being traded by the Padres. Another name, Jake Cronenworth. Jake Cronenworth's name has come up mostly in the Athletic, where Dennis Lynn covers the Padres, and he seems to have some insight that the Padres are looking to potentially deal Jake Cronenworth. Guess who we're going to be talking to on Friar Friday tomorrow from St. Louis? It's looking like Jake Cronenworth. So we'll see what Jake has to say about that tomorrow.
I mean, you and Tony in the opening segment discuss what this time of the year is like for players.
Right. We'll find out from him.
The horse's mouth tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll find out from him what it's like. I mean, he's got to have heard his name. He's got to have been asked about it already a bunch of times. I don't know that Jake Cronenworth's a guy I'd be in a big hurry to trade. I think he's a perfect fit, first base, second base, DH, bat number 7. Would I like him to hit 320? Sure I would, but I think Jake Cronenworth is, you know, just a winning ball player. But he also has a contract that lasts 5 more years and, you know, is pretty expensive. So there's talk that the Padres could move him. The third name, you just see it because it makes sense. But I don't know that the Padres are actively shopping him. As a matter of fact, yeah, I like to say this, but when we're talking about this stuff on the radio, and some of it probably gets back to A.J. Preller, he's probably just laughing. But a lot of people think Robert Suarez is an excellent bargaining chip as well. Padres are already loaded in the bullpen. They could easily move Jason Adam, Adrian Morejon, or even Estrada to the closer role. Suarez is going to be a free agent at the end of the year. He's going to command big bucks. You also would think somebody would pay handsomely for him. Will all three be traded? Will any of the three be traded? We'll find out in the next 7 days. Now, names that are being rumored to be coming to the Padres. And by the way, Adam, I just want you to know, in my own personal way of going through the trade deadline, I root for none of these guys to end up as Padres. I root for 4 guys that haven't been mentioned to end up being Padres. I kind of perversely like when all of the prognosticators are wrong. That's just how I go through the trade deadline.
Such a rebel.
I know, I'm terrible. You think I'd be happy for my cohorts in the media, you know, that they get one right once in a while. But some of the names, Jaron Duran from the Red Sox, we've been hearing for a while. The problem with Jaron Duran for the Red Sox is a lot of teams have been, his name's crossed their lips as well. Stephen Kwan of the Cleveland Guardians, his name has come up. He had 2 home runs today. He's got 8 on the season. He's got a OPS of, I'm going to say, 762. He's got 11 stolen bases. He's an all-star. Is he the right fit for the Padres? I don't know. I think he's a leadoff hitter. I think he's similar to Arise. Probably walks a little bit more. Everybody walks more than Arise. But I'm not, you know, Stephen Kwan isn't my answer, but that doesn't mean he's not what they're looking for. Guardians are right at the 500 mark right now, and they're quite a ways behind the Tigers in the AL Central. Another name is one we already discussed for other reasons, Marcell Ozuna. Although folks down in Atlanta are saying that they can't confirm any of the reports that are out there, that the Padres have talked about bringing in, I don't want to say a former slugger, but he just has not been slugging much this year. In fact, he's been downright awful for the last 2 months. But Marcell Ozuna was 4th in the MVP balloting last year. Hit 39 homers. Adolis Garcia is a name that's come up, although I'd be worried now that Texas Rangers have been on a roll lately. They're 3 games over 500. Don't know that they're in the mood to trade. A team that we know is in the mood to trade is the Orioles. Ryan O'Hearn's name comes up a lot. Left-handed hitting first baseman DH, could even play left field. I don't know that he'd be a big upgrade defensively even over Gavin Sheets in left field. But Ryan O'Hearn's a pretty good hitter. He's a former all-star. The Orioles are definitely looking to move. Those are the position-type players we're hearing. Pitchers, already talked about Charlie Morton. Now, Charlie Morton, I said yesterday, but now I've taken another look at this. Charlie Morton has really been good. He won again today. He's 6-1 with an ERA of 3.5 the last month and a half. He's a proven postseason pitcher as well. I think, without looking it up, and I'll probably try to look it up as I'm talking about it, pretty sure Charlie Morton was the winning pitcher in Game 7 of the cheating World Series when he was with the Astros at Dodger Stadium. I think he got that win. You know, Charlie Morton's been pretty good in the postseason. So, to me, he's a little more interesting name than I originally thought. 7-5 career postseason record. It's pretty good. He was with your Braves in 2021.
He got hit in the leg by a comebacker in the World Series and broke his leg.
In that fractured. World Series?
Different World Series. That's for the Braves, right? But he stayed in and finished the inning.
Interesting.
Tough guy.
Tough guy. All right, he's 41 years old. The other name that I've even heard is Zach Eflin, who's another Oriole. Former Tampa Bay Ray. Eflin can pitch a little bit. Have you heard any names that I didn't mention, Adam? I mean, those are, and just because I'm only mentioning those names, again, that doesn't mean those are the only possibilities. You know darn well there's other names out there that no one has yet mentioned. As being linked to the Padres, there's a whole bunch of other guys that are linked elsewhere.
Well, those are the big names, but can I throw out another name? Someone who hasn't been mentioned as much, and that's Adrian Hauser. He's a starting pitcher for the White Sox, meaning they are out of it and aren't trying to contend.
Clearly out of it. Oh, you know what? Now that you mentioned the White Sox, I should say Luis Robert's name come up a lot.
So that's why I'm mentioning Hauser. He's 32 years old. He's a journeyman, played the majority of his career for the Brewers, but he's having an outstanding season. He has a 1.89 ERA going along with a 5-2 record. So if you're trading for Luis Robert, maybe we get Adrian Hauser thrown in there.
I'd actually rather trade for Adrian Hauser and have Luis Robert thrown in. Well, but
Luis Robert is complicating things because he's played so well the last couple weeks. He's upping his trade value.
I guess. If you trade for the Luis Robert of 2023, I'll take him. But the Luis Robert the last 2 years, OPS is in the mid-600s. He's almost an automatic out. But and we already have a lot of those.
At Snack Wrap,
excuse us. That's the bottom of the hour, and that was an automatic trigger. Go ahead.
Chris, can I, the same way you said you weren't that interested in Charlie Morton, you know, until you actually looked at his stats.
Closer, right. You're saying Robert's been on a roll lately.
In his last 30 days, that's a decent sample size, right?
Okay.
1,011 OPS.
Okay.
1.011 OPS. So three homers, 10 RBIs.
All right. Well, he's currently at 636 OPS, which means he was at about 200 before that.
He had a terrible start to the season, but over the last 30 days, he's hitting 341.
Okay.
426 OBP, 585 slug. Steals a lot of bases, right?
He does. He does do that. He's got 26 stolen bases among the league leaders
and
there.
A former top overall prospect in all of baseball who looks like he's finding it. And I think, personally, I think his acquisition cost will be low because he has a $20 million club option for next year, and there is absolutely no way the White Sox are going to pay him $20 million next year. Neither will likely the team who trades for him unless he goes berserk. So you trade for, the point is the White Sox are incentivized to trade him because they're not going to pay him $20 million next year.
The only problem I have is I just don't think he's that good. He was a Rookie of the Year, second place. He was a Gold Glove winner in 2020. He was an All-Star in 23. But the last 2 years have been miserable. And I put more stock into that.
I'm not disputing that. I'm just saying so, he seems to have turned things on over the last 30 days.
Hopefully. We'll see. He's certainly another name that's out there. Here's my only thing. I want to go back to Adrian Hauser for a second. Because those are pretty eye-popping numbers, right? 5-2, 1.89. Made 10 starts. Hauser has. I always get worried, and maybe this is wrong, but I always get worried about bringing a guy in who's playing on a team that is just absolutely going nowhere and then asking them to gear up and be in the middle of a pennant race. Now, some guys, I think it works for. Some guys do it, and they're recharged, and it's a big deal. Other guys find the pressure to be something that they're not used to because they're not pitching under pressure now.
But a guy like Adrian Hauser, you're not
bringing...
What
do you think of that?
But a guy like... I understand, but if you trade for Adrian Hauser, he's almost definitely not pitching in your playoff games, right? In the most important games. It's just a guy to fill out the back of your rotation to eat some innings, make some starts every fifth day, whatever, for the rest of the regular season, give you a chance to win a game every fifth day, and then once the playoffs start, you're rolling with your top guys.
Well, not bad, Adam Klug. Not bad. I can see why you're the boss. Those are good thoughts. Anyway, we'll all find out a week from now. It's going to be an interesting week, and I said this on the roundtable. I think it's going to be one of the most interesting weeks we've ever seen because John Morosi And this is why I want you to play this. John Morosi's from MLB Network. Take it with a grain of salt. John Morosi was the guy that had Shohei Ohtani on a flight to Toronto. So just remember that all of these guys can be wrong, but a lot of times they're right. And John Morosi says the Padres could do more than just be a team acquiring players. And that's what makes this so interesting. Here's his thoughts.
Yes, and that's the news that Dylan Cease's name has come up in conversations. Buster Olney first to report that. The overarching story for the Padres is this. As one Padres connected person told me last night, AJ is talking to everyone. And that, of course, refers to AJ Preller, their president of baseball operations, and indicates to me the Padres are open-minded to buy and sell. And that scenario could look like this. You trade this man, Dylan Cease, who admittedly his ERA is up a run higher than it's been, than it was in 2024. Perhaps you trade Cease, who has an expiring contract, to replenish some of your minor league depth, and then use that new prospect depth to go out there and make a package for Sandy Alcantara, and Dennis Lynn has reported on that potentially with The Athletic. So maybe you see a Sandy Alcantara trade coming in because Alcantara is not eligible for free agency until after 2026. Maybe he comes in. Stephen Kwan's a possibility, and John Heyman's reported on that. I think you're starting to see the thought process for AJ Preller. It's a bubble team. I think they're more buyer than seller, but if you sell Dylan Cease and bring back some prospects, you're able to strengthen your roster for the long term and look at the next week of buying as the first salvo of your offseason spending for 25-26. So again, to recap, you might see Dylan Cease going out, but you might also see a Sandy Alcantara or Stephen Kwan coming in.
Now, Chris, when have we ever seen AJ Preller trade a major league player for minor league talent and then turn around and flip said minor league talent for major league talent? Oh, yeah, Juan Soto getting Drew Thorpe back and trading him for
Dylan Cease. It could happen.
Life is a circle, Chris.
I like John Morosi. He's been on the show before. I don't like the way he pronounces Sandy Alcantara. I've never heard it pronounced that way. Sandy Alcantara, the Marlins, pitched great the other day. He's been a real disappointment this year. You'd be rolling the dice a little bit on him. Of course, you're pretty much rolling the dice on everybody, right? Nobody's an absolute guarantee. So, ball is in your court, AJ. And, you know, it's in a lot of people's court. Eugenio Suarez is rumored to be the biggest trade domino of them all. Yankees need a third baseman. Cubs need a third baseman. Mariners need a third baseman. Tigers need a third baseman. Brewers could use a third baseman. Those are all contending clubs, big-time contending clubs. Who would want to get the Major League RBI leader? And isn't that weird that we're even talking about that, that the Major League leader in RBIs would be traded, but such is the way things are these days. Josh Naylor, another name being mentioned. Those are two Diamondbacks, by the way. Well, Merrill Kelly's a third Diamondback, and Zach Gallen is a fourth. The Diamondbacks being swept this week by the Astros may have signaled all of that happening. Because I think if it goes the other way, I don't know, the Diamondbacks would have to make a trade. They'd still be in the running.
Well, there's been a lot of discussion about whether or not they will or won't trade their impending free agents. And earlier today, Diamondbacks CEO Derek Hall said on Arizona Sports, said that the Diamondbacks should be responsible sellers at the deadline.
Responsible. All right.
So I think at least some of their impending free agents will be traded.
Then you have teams like the Pirates, who I believe are only in Major League Baseball, so that when the trade deadline comes around, teams can try to pluck some of their best players. Why else are the Pirates in the league? David Bednar, closer. Tigers really need a closer. So do a couple of other teams. Bednar's been much better. Manuel Clase of Cleveland, Johan Duran of Minnesota are other closers whose names have popped up out there. Seth Lugo, the old Padre, could be on his way from the Royals, people say. Mitch Keller's another Pirate whose name is being mentioned a lot.
There was a report last night that people have been checking in with the Pirates about O'Neill Cruz. And that the Pirates didn't hang up the phone on them.
Why don't they just trade O'Neill Cruz and Paul Skeens and make themselves completely irrelevant now? Why wait? Who knows what the Pirates are going to do? You know the funny thing, just real quick, and then we got to get ready for the pregame. I don't see any Rockies players being rumored to be traded, even though they're completely out of it.
I've seen
because they
one.
Don't have anybody worth trading the to only, anyone. Ryan McMahon a little?
Yeah, Ryan McMahon's the only name I've seen.
Just a little. But yeah, don't look now. Rockies have won two straight series. Maybe they're onto something. And they shut out the Cardinals yesterday. Hopefully the Padres can keep the bad mojo going for St. Louis. Sam Levitt's got the pregame show. We're on tomorrow for like an hour and a half again. Jake Cronenworth, currently scheduled to be on the program tomorrow. Don't miss that, with his name right in the middle of this trade stuff. And then enjoy the ball game tonight, and we'll be on tomorrow. Thank you, Adam Klug. Well done. Finally, some intelligent commentary coming from over in that seat. That wasn't nice. Even when Scraby's not here.
Not even here to defend himself.
I know. Tony Gwynn Jr. in St. Louis. I'm Chris Sello. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.